You are listening to the Power of Why podcast.
You would actually make their lives better. That's what people want. You're making an app, you're designing a technology. How exactly can that technology bring something of value in someone's life and actually make it better? Is it going to save them time? Is it going to save them money? Are they going to think on a different level and really upgrade their thinking patterns and even their habits and discipline?
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Power of Why podcast. My name is Naomi Hailey, and today we are here with Anne-Marie Malumba. Anne-Marie, it's great to have you here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be able to join today. I really enjoyed the podcast and I've known you for a little bit. Congrats on having such a podcast that people listen to, and I'm excited for myself to have like conversations that are going to be energizing with my friends and people that I love. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm so excited that you're here, Anne-Marie. So excited because we met years ago. We met years ago in Ottawa at a few events for Black professionals. Yeah. And I just appreciate that we've stayed in contact, and just following along on your journey has been very inspiring, everything that you're working on. You are seriously one of the most creative people that I know, just the way that you see the world, how you experience the world. So I'm super excited to chat with you today. For the audience, Anne-Marie is a creative entrepreneur and the founder of Wobolo Studio, a product-led service company that helps startups relieve customer bottlenecks with the goal of increasing user engagement and product market fit. Anne-Marie is focused on equipping the next generation of change makers with the tools and skills they need to empower themselves and change the world. She facilitates interactive design thinking workshops at McGill, Concordia, Toronto Metropolitan University, and various innovation hubs. She's also a board director for Computers for Success Canada, a nonprofit organization that promotes digital inclusion. With a background in sociology and graphic design, Anne-Marie graduated with a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Graphic and Industrial Design from Concordia University. And I think like just the nature of what you studied, I'm like not at all surprised in the types of things that you like to solve with organizations today and just how your brain works. And so, yeah, I'm super excited for you to be here, Anne-Marie. I would love if you could start by sharing a little bit about your origin story. What did you love doing as a child and growing up? And we can go from there.
Yeah, my origin story, I can start from different angles, but I wanted to start with me being East African. So I was born in Tanzania. My dad is from Congo. And so I come from this, in quotes, mixed family with, two parents coming from like neighboring countries. And my dad was actually a refugee in Tanzania because he escaped the war in Congo. Obviously, Congo is a war-ridden country. And my grandpa was actually in the military in Congo and died during that war. And my dad escaped and moved to Tanzania as a refugee and then met my mom. And so my story is kind of interesting to think about when I think about myself being, in quotes, like a refugee because of my dad's status. That's how I grew up in Tanzania. I came to Canada when I was 6 years old. But if you kind of consider that first foundation of my young years, right? I was East African. I grew up speaking Swahili. I was a refugee because of my dad's status. And then I come to this new country and then have to start again and learn French, English, and kind of accommodate to like a new culture, et cetera. And so I think about all that and how that informs what I'm doing today. It's kind of interesting to consider adapting as a kind of an importing tool for me when I was growing up in order to kind of like assimilate and like fit into different cultures and spaces and like be able to like communicate with people, right? And so I realized how my multicultural kind of diverse background informs what I do today as a designer and why I love to design things for people and really thinking about what's in mind for them and their needs and challenges, etc. That's my origin story. I moved to Canada. And then some of my fondest memories growing up was spending time with my siblings and my dad, especially when we played like simulation games together. Let's say like we had to solve a mystery. And so we were all like in front of this computer thinking about how we can solve it, and then like kind of like supporting each other like that. Most of my memories I remember are that I'm fond about are like connected to my dad as well, and like him kind of showing us how to do things. And so growing up really loving tech and not knowing that I'm actually going to work in that space in the future is also interesting to me. I remember spending hours and hours like playing games on a computer. And I still remember that like old computer, you know, those like ones with the big like butts in the back, the white ones, and then that sound. And then you have to connect them with your phone, things like that. Growing up, I had a lot of siblings. So that too maybe informs like what I do today, kind of like considering other people's emotions and empathy and making sure that I'm also connecting with like different generations, having friends where intergenerational in a way too, is like something that I value as well in my young years and stuff. So yeah, that's my origin story.
Super cool. And so many different angles of things that you kind of paid attention to. For people who come to you today with particular challenges in their business or want to rethink how they structure experiences in their business, what led you to even want to settle in this space? Can you talk a little bit about some of the work that you've done before starting Wabalo Studio and how you incorporated different problem solving techniques and strategies to the work that you do today?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's say like maybe 7 to 8 years ago, I did not know that user experience or like human-centered design was a thing. At that time, I was like still interested in design because I worked in design agencies. I was freelancing on the side and I was always trying to get a new piece in my portfolio and grow it so that I can kind of expand my work and then do more and get more clients. And so I remember working in design agencies and then also feeling quite unsatisfied with the results of what we were creating. And so, for example, we would work for this like engineering project and they would ask us to do rebrand their company and like redo their logo and their website, etc. And I remember that there was something missing in our process. Like I knew that we worked in teams and we collaborated on different ideas. But then at the end, I was always asking myself, how come we didn't actually talk to the audience to figure out what angle to take this in order to actually build something that aligns with their needs and etc. And so that's where my thinking of like, where is UX, where is user experience came from, basically. And so I started doing some research online. And so when I entered university in my first year, and this was actually quite lucky because I became a co-op in uni, my design program, my BFA. And I decided to do that because I wanted more experience and I wanted to really not just study, I wanted to actually apply everything that I was learning in school. And so as a co-op, I was able to then become an intern at a government organization in Toronto first, actually. And so the year where we met, I was in Ottawa doing another internship, but a year prior, I was in Toronto working for the Ontario Digital Service. And when I saw that first kind of job description, the first time when I was a student, I looked at it and I was amazed because I was like, this is what I'm literally looking for to do.
Piece.
And I was like, what? Like it exists. And I did not know that. But when I was in college, so that was like maybe four years before my university degree, I did humanities or like social sciences. And what I really enjoyed were biopsychology classes, sociology, anthropology, and all these kind of human focused, and even philosophy classes. But then I did not know that all these things will actually converge in the future. I was like learning about psychology and behaviors and like how hormones affect how people think and act and behaves, et cetera. And then when I got to university, I got to think in a speculative way and think about the future and and how to build sustainable cities and environments and how to support humans in their environments, et cetera. And so I think that my university degree and also my college learnings and like sociology, et cetera, really shaped my kind of thinking and perception of the world. And also it matched my, I think I'm a, I idealistic person. I like to think that things are going to get better. I like to build solutions that actually work and improve life, etc. And so I'm always thinking about how, in an optimistic way, I like to like think that life is, optimistic. And so then started doing internships and then discovered user experience and found really a way for me to frame everything that I always wanted to do, right? And so thinking about humans and our thoughts and processes and our emotions, as well as our mental models, as we call them in industry, and then mixing that with technology and technology enabling someone to actually achieve what they want to do, and then design being the facilitator of that experience as well. And so everything just made sense all of a sudden. I was like, oh, okay, this is it. And so me running, like facilitating workshops, is kind of a manifestation of all these things that I've been able to learn and apply at work. And so they come together in a format that I design myself, and then I apply it, and then we can actually create new experiences and tech with that. Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful, the way that your curiosities and just your love for learning were able to meet in that environment for you, where you had that first aha of, oh, like something like this exists. I can like apply things that I'm curious about and help other people and also make good money, you know?
Yeah.
For you, thinking to some of your own user experiences, like you being on the other end of the things that you now design, do you have a story of an experience that you came into contact with that really wowed you, maybe even before you had the language for what that was, what a user experience was? Were there any products that you came into contact with, apps, or even physical in-person experiences that really wowed you?
Yeah, good question. And I feel like I'm constantly thinking about user experience as I walk around. I use an app, I use Google Maps and stuff to like go to places, and I try different restaurants and bars, etc. So it's kind of tough to really focus on like one thing that I enjoyed, but I can mention, for example, actually before I became a student at Concordia, I send them a portfolio with work that I've done before, and some of the ways that I was thinking about the world. And like, I remember one thing that I showed, like, and I actually like presented in that portfolio, was an essay that I wrote about human-centered design. And one project that really stuck with me was this structure, these architectures that I think it was IKEA built in Africa, in order to support refugee camps. And so thinking back at my origin story and like, you know, the refugee life, and then how to actually create environments that are livable and comfortable and not too hot, right, in that kind of hot climate, was something that I was really fascinated by at that time. And I do think that the spaces that we live in definitely impact the way that we think and feel. And so going into a restaurant, a bar, a space that like really thought about how things are moving and the lighting, and you know, like, is it like high ceilings? Is it kind of smaller, but it still feels cozy, right? And like using plants and different materials in order to create an environment and a feeling around is something that I think about every single day. And I'd say in terms of an app, any company that really tries to speak to the user directly by considering their emotions at that specific stage of the use, it really impresses for me, because I know how much work it takes to actually get there and figure out exactly, let's say, for example, a financial, like a fintech app, and maybe it's like a, not necessarily like a banking, but it just helps you make transactions in order to help you feel relieved or not too stressed or like uncomfortable about like adding your banking information so that they can make that transaction happen, can actually speak to you at that moment and show to you that it is safe and it's secure, and they write it in a way that is relatable, right? And it kind of like, it makes you laugh almost, is something that I find really cool when companies are able to do that. Really can like, can happen in any app that exists.
And there's a lot of research on this. I'm currently designing an experience at one of the companies that I consult with.
Yeah.
And it's amazing when you break down the phases of a client life cycle of what happens before they're even a customer to, yes, they've come in through the doors, you've welcomed them. Like, and immediately I learned that even if they're excited that they found someone who could help them with a particular challenge that they have, they still experience buyer's remorse. And so knowing the different emotions that come up throughout, as you mentioned, really help you like affirm the customer, show them that we're going to take care of them. And you do that through language, you do that through experience, like you mentioned restaurants as well. Would you say for a lot of the spaces or the individuals that you meet, these things that you spend like a lot of your energy and focus on, do you think they're typically an afterthought for a lot of people across different industries, or are you seeing more of a trend of this actually being like a central focus and a very critical part of the process?
Amazing question. I'd say that most of the time, unfortunately, it is an afterthought, but it is usually because companies, and let's say specifically like tech companies, they spend most of their time trying to figure out if the technology or the technicality is actually working, because, you know, if it doesn't, then you cannot enable that experience to happen. So I'm just going to bring out like a tangent right now. I have a partnership with Draw Backwards. It's an agency based in the States, and they do UX work as well, but more on a brand scale. And I reached out to them because they created this framework called basically like ladders, and it helps companies know where they actually stand in terms of their user experience. And there's like about like five different stages. And number five is like the best, right? The ones that like really understand the user needs and really like actually support those needs and in a way that matches their environments and like how they actually work in the world and things like that. And so the Googles and the right and all these companies that actually are figured out how to actually build experiences over time. So number five is the highest, and then one is like at the start where you're just like figuring out the technical side and try to like make it work. And then after that, you get to stage two, three, four. And as you move along those stages, you figure out that you actually have to provide value into someone's life. Not just like a little bit of value, but more literally, you would actually make their lives better. That's what people want. It's like you're making an app, you're designing a technology. And how exactly can that technology bring something of value in someone's life and actually make it better? Is it going to save them time? Is it going to save them money? Are they going to think on a different level and really upgrade their thinking patterns and even their habits and discipline, et cetera, or even their motivation, et cetera? But it's really hard to get there, and it takes a lot of time and data and effort and like design as well. Design has to be at the center to get to that stage. And so most of the time it's not necessarily an afterthought because it's on purpose, but it's just difficult to get there. And some companies don't have the tools or the skill set internally to be able to get there. And they might not even know the value of design or human-centered philosophy and ways of designing things and creating.
With the like interactions that you've had with different organizations, like we've had a chance to talk offline on some of the cool projects that you've worked on, what is it that brings you like the most joy about doing this work? And then also what challenges you the most?
Yeah, I can bring out this workshop that I led last year with a client. I'm not sure if I talked to you about it like offline last time, but I was working with a company here in Montreal that wants to build a tech experience, so like an app to support patients with cancer, specifically women with breast cancer as well as ovarian cancer. And that client specifically, the founder invited one of his friends and also a patient and someone who experiences that specific condition as well in order to support us in helping understand our journey for us to actually take that, extract it and turn it into insight that can help us design a better product. And so that person was actually in the workshop with us. The founder was there, my team was there, and we were going through our typical kind of like design workshop. And she would share during that workshop her experience, how she spent time in a hospital, how much time it took for doctors to actually figure out a diagnosis for her condition. Like, it took her almost like 2 to 3 years for her to actually, and it was insane. And at the end of the session, I was still obviously professionally, like, you know, doing my job and like facilitating the session, but I almost had like tears in my eyes because I realized how like precious life is, as well as her experience was so tough, and that she was willing to share it with us, and that sharing with us was also going to enable us to create something that's going to be of value for people that are actually in the same, you know, situation and have the same condition. And then I realized how I, like, that's where I was like, okay, I really like my job. And the fact that she was so open, and the fact that I found it really tough as well to be there and to listen to a really a story that was like gut-wrenching and just like, right? It was hard and also in a way validating. It was hard to experience that, but also validating in a way that my goal as a designer and a researcher and someone who has a company that's focused on building better technology, I want to make tech better. And I know that technology is going to continue to, you know, get better and expand, and AI is going to take more space in our lives in a way that we think and we do things. But I also have this ethos that tech can actually do good, and we can design it to do that. And so how do we actually, like, actually take the initiative in order to move it into that direction? And so that experience actually kind of not proved to me, but showed me that we can actually create those like moments that are delightful and can actually change people's lives through technology.
Yeah. And so that story was like after you had started your company, your agency, brought on a team, all of that. I'm wondering if you could bring us to before you started your agency, because you were navigating within organizations. You'd mentioned that you saw a gap in how your former teams were approaching client experiences and building brands. What was your impetus and the thing that really encouraged you to say, hey, there's an opportunity here, I see a challenge? Like, what was your thesis for wanting to start Wobalo Studios and really compelled you to take that step forward? Because, you know, it's not easy to start a company, for one. And it's a huge undertaking. And so what was really the thesis that got you started on that path?
Yeah, good question. And it's funny because I was messaging someone on LinkedIn this morning who was like a design UX leader in the space. And I was telling him how I'm still trying to craft and find a niche for Wobalo Studio. And so even if, like, when I started like Wobalo Studio in 2022, officially kind of incorporated it, I had an idea of what I wanted to create, but I'm still creating that idea and I'm still crafting it and like improving it and, you know, and tweaking it. And when I started Wobalo Studio, I had this idea of starting it because I thought that my perspective of someone who is East African, has a design background, has worked in research and service design in the past, and also as someone who's really interested in culture, and I've, you know, spent time learning other languages. I learned Korean for 6 months in 2016 to 2018. I was like practicing and like actively learning it. And so thinking about all these different perspectives that live within me, I thought that it could be interesting to create a space for design and research from someone like me in a way that's kind of like atypical, weirdly shaped. Like, if you kind of envision me as like a, you know, a sphere or something, I'm like, I have these like all these like corners, and it's like, oh, interesting, what kind of background do you have? And so at first I was thinking that I wanted to start something that can bring a team together and not necessarily kind of a big agencies that's like 100 people. How can it actually do work that's empowering and still be kind of a niche small team that's like a powerhouse? That was my first idea. And then I still was thinking about this perspective of like frameworks. I'm just gonna show you to the screen like what I designed with my team last year. And
I
I
love
showed
these
you some of
cards.
these, right? And so I'm constantly thinking about frameworks or ways to condense or like kind of like put together information in a digestible way. And also to create frameworks that help people think better. And so that's why I lead workshops, because I create frameworks that help teams and founders think about the products in a different way so that we can prioritize and categorize and then come up with an idea that can turn out great later once we build it. That perspective of like designing frameworks that help teams understand information, make decisions, et cetera, was constantly in my mind. And I'm still thinking about it today, and I'm actually going to launch something in the next couple of weeks that's going to actually respond to that problems that I've had for, you know,
Cool.
that I've been trying to figure out how to actually solve it for the last couple of years. And so that's where I started with Bella Studio. And also, to be honest, it was because I saw so many examples around me of people that were business owners that created and like creative like businesses or even like accounting businesses.
Yeah.
And I wanted to create something on my own and test out this journey of entrepreneurship and see if that's something that works for me or not. Because working in a company has always been difficult in a way for me. I've always enjoyed working in teams and my relationships with my managers, like all these things I've enjoyed so much throughout my career. But the structure of a 9 to 5, I've always had trouble with it, to be
Yeah.
fully honest with you. And so I've always looked for ways to actually work with my lifestyle and my way of thinking and doing things. Like I could spend 4 hours, let's say, like writing an article or something like that, and then like 2 hours later I'm going for lunch with a friend, and then I come back and I'm like, you know, brainstorming an idea for something, and then like I'm doing a competitive analysis for a client. So I'm constantly like moving in between flow state and then, you know, like being in a moment, living with friends, going to see my family, spending time with my loved ones. And so I find it difficult to like have a really fixed structure because I have this like, you know, weird way of moving into the inner world. And maybe you can relate to that as well.
Very much. Very much. And I didn't even know that I valued that until moving to New York and starting school here and having that flexible schedule where I had a chance to study when I pleased, go downtown, hang out with people, come back, go to class. Like it was very malleable, just depending on how I was able to like structure my week, right? But it didn't mean that I had to compromise on things that I wanted to do in my life. And so I completely understand. And so before you had started Babala Studios, and I'd love to like get your thoughts on the gig economy and how just the nature of work and the future of work is changing. I'm assuming that you tested it out a little bit, like evenings, weekends. Maybe you had a few clients that you were able to test out pieces of what this larger vision would look like before you went in full time. So, can you talk to us a little bit about that journey? Hey there. Thanks for tuning into this episode. If you are enjoying the conversation, make sure to share it with a friend. Take a screenshot, spread the word. It really allows me to bring on more incredible guests as we continue to level up in the podcasting space.
Yeah, I feel like I've always been a gig economy person. Like even
Yeah.
before it became like a, you know, a word or a thing that, you know, it today exists after the pandemic or during it. And so I remember after college, so I graduated in 2014, and then I started freelancing right away because I started learning graphic design, and then I would take like a 1.5 year graphic design course. And so I started freelancing in 2016 or 17.
Well.
And so like, even when I was studying, I would have a client on the side or two or three sometimes, right? And so even university, I would have like two or three clients at a time. And I remember my managers would always kind of like look at me like, are you sure you can manage all that kind of all that work? And I was like, yeah, yeah, I can do it. And so I would work on weekends and like in the evening at like six after like finish my shift at work at five, I would go into a coffee shop and I would spend a couple hours working something on the side. Either it's client work or I was building something from scratch on my own because I had this idea. I've always kind of lived like that and I found it normal. And I've been part of the gig economy for a little bit. Even when I was working full time, I would have like one or two clients on the side as well. Cause I really enjoy the versatility of like juggling multiple projects and kind of moving in between them. So it's like, I'm working on this client work, but then, you know, this I'm stuck somewhere. And so I move to the next project and then I kind of, you know, work on something and then I come back a couple hours or days later. It's always been fun for me. And so, yeah, I've tested it out for a little bit. And then in 2022, I had my first agency client. And so I hired people on my team, a subcontract on a different project. And so I was able to actually test out the model for like a year or so before I jumped on the wagon, let's say, to start the agency. To this day, I'm still trying to figure out how to shape it in a way that fits with my lifestyle. Because one thing that I keep thinking about is what kind of life do I want to live? One thing that I think about sometimes is what retirement like would be like for someone like me. And like, if I want to live like the traditional life, I could retire in my 50s or 60s or whatever, depending on where like it lands in the next decades or something. But I've always thought about what it would mean for me to retire early and to have a flexible schedule and to still do work because I can't be like, you know, lounging like all day. But I keep thinking about that. And I think about my retirement every single year, multiple times a month. And not because I'm like,
I think we're like the same person. Same, Anne-Marie. Yeah.
Right. And so what would retiring mean to me? What it would look like? And what kind of life do I want to live? And so how can I design it so that in the next 5, 10, 15 years, I'm actually there and I don't hate my life because I created, you know, like a big monster. So I can design my agency to be huge if I want to and I put the work and the effort. But then do I really want to have that kind of weight on my shoulders in the next kind of decades, right? So I think about that all the time. And so what kind of life do I want to design? And how do I design my business to fit into the lifestyle that I want?
That's fantastic. When you look at, and this can be specific to your agency and how it's structured, or your larger opinions around how work is changing, because now the rates of individuals in both America and Canada that are exploring alternative ways of working, it's rising and it's going to continue to rise. Whether people have full-time roles and are exploring things like we both did on weekends and during evenings, or it's an opportunity for people to make income if they, you know, get unemployed. There's so many layoffs that are happening right now across industries and sectors that we thought were untouchable. Even if it's an interim opportunity to ensure that people are making money for until they find their next role, there's just so many avenues to monetize your skills and think more creatively about how you make money. And so what are some of your projections around how people can maximize their time, monetize their skills, and create a lifestyle that aligns well with what they're looking for and desiring?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Work is changing and the relationship with it. Also, what I'm thinking in terms of the future is that by 2030 or 2035, most people will actually move from full-time to part-time or contract work. In the next decade or so, the gig economy is going to be the default in a way, because companies, and especially when it comes to AI and its capacity today, what it can do in 2024, if we think about how it's going to exponentially continue to like build itself and grow and like expand in terms of its skills, it will also make that companies today will decide to hire less and focus on specific skill sets, and even on skill sets that match with AI in a way that's like almost like human and computer like interaction or collaboration for their bottom line in a way too, but especially in order to be more efficient. And so when it comes to that AI taking over, and honestly, like, you know, as an entity taking over and like the human race is like disappearing, but more like it actually having more and more space in our work environment, it would mean that people are going to move slowly away from the full-time defaults and slowly closer to the contractor work, even business owner lifestyle, and have a business on the side, right? Like you're saying, a side gig, right. Even build something from scratch on their own, whether it's content creation or whether it's like having your own nail spot, right, in the city and selling digital products and ebooks and things like that. I'm actually going to create a newsletter that's coming out in the next couple of weeks that's going to talk about this specifically, because I realized how it could be scary to think about how am I going to adapt to that new future? Do I have the right skill set in order to match with the skill sets are going to be needed in the next decade or so? And what do I do to prepare? How can I align with those needs? And how do I still create a sustainable lifestyle while having a business and also like having a balance in my life? And so I realized that's a problem space for me as a person who has a business, but also wants to live a life that's full. And like, I like spend time with my friends and my partner, and I cook all the time, and I want to like still be creative and move.
Yeah.
And so how can I balance all these things? And so I'm going to create something around that in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to share it on LinkedIn and everywhere else, because yeah, I think it's going to be a major conversation, especially for women.
I love this space. I love this space. And even in casual conversation, Anne-Marie, I'm sure with friends and with peers and acquaintances, I think there is that tug that some people have around, oh, I'm facing this challenge at work. Yeah. And when you start, like, you're very inquisitive, right? Like when you start asking questions about what do they want in their life? What is it that really excites you and fuels you? How you're really able to contribute and use your gifts to help other people? A lot of potential and possibility opens up, I think. What have you learned about yourself and your why when it comes to the work that you do, how you spend your time, how you're an educator as well, so how you educate people? What have you learned about your why and your purpose over the last couple of years?
Yeah, super good question. And I've definitely journaled about this in the last kind of 5 years or so. And I like to actually spend time to like think about these questions and really think about who I want to be and what kind of work I want to do. And I realized that I do tend to attract work that's quite mission driven as well. Companies are building things that are going to create more sustainability in the world, more like both socially and environmentally, and wellness apps and things like that. And so I tend to attract those types of work. And one thing that I realized that that is my why, and you mentioned it in your the bio in the beginning, was this change making aspect of things, how to empower people, especially women, to be their best selves. So then they can actually align with their mission, in quote, and what they're actually meant to do, or like align the most when it comes to their skill set and personalities and values, is something that I think about a lot. And leading workshops, not just for clients, but also when I went to universities and talked to students and things like that, I realized how much people value one-on-one conversations and interactions to support them in their expansion as people, in order for them to actually be able to think about what they need themselves. where they could be instead of where they are. And then to also have hope about what's coming as well, so that they can look at your story. It could be yours as well, right? And hear your story of how you got here and who you've worked with, and them being inspired by that story, they can then kind of start imagining what that could look like for them. And so that's what I realized is a why for me is, how can I actually be in spaces where I talk to people that can relate to me and my stories? And then that story can actually help them be more hopeful and also think about the future and be motivated for what's coming for them, and like to actually work on the things that they've been putting on the side, or mm-hmm. they've been thinking about, but they just haven't had the time, or they're doubting what they're trying to do.
Yeah, I think your lens and your perspective on seeing the good in the future is very inspiring. And I think you just offer a really fresh perspective that I truly and deeply appreciate. Anne-Marie, as we wrap up the episode, I'm curious to know, for mission-oriented and mission-driven companies that either have a product or service that they're offering to clients, and you know, maybe they're established, they've been in the market for over 5 years, but want to think about, you use the word delight, and I love that word, like delighting yeah. their clients and the people that they serve. What is a good starting point where there's already a structure in place, whether it's well thought out or intentional or not? What are ways that people can start to think differently about how they design and how they are able to support like the people that they serve?
Amazing question. And you said something about that they already have something in place, right? And they've been maybe on the market for like 5 years. I say one thing that they could do, and this goes back to workshopping and doing it in teams. What could be really interesting is, given teams or that company, if they really want to think about how to, let's say, improve their user experience, they could run a workshop and even invite us to run it, right? And really think about things that they could do that if they didn't have the boundaries or the constraints or the team setup that they have at the moment. Because sometimes teams are really stuck in the framework that they, you know, created for themselves, because let's say team members are teams are structured this specific ways, or this is how we typically approach it because that's how we've always done it before, right? It's like kind of these like invisible walls that are created sometimes, and teams don't actually like see them that well until they realize that we keep doing this because, you know, that's how they told us to do it. But then what would things look like when those invisible walls are brought down? What would things look like if the constraints that you've worked with or always worked with did not exist? What would things look like if the types of customers or clients that you work with were aligned with the kind of like desires of that company specifically? So then they can start thinking about ways to expand even like their services, or even they could start to expand how they actually onboard their new team members. So then from the start, they can actually have the right vision or stories or like philosophy when it comes to like that specific company. And so bringing down the walls that are invisible that have been created before, it could be a really powerful exercise. So I mentioned the bringing down walls, but I'd say also thinking about ways to incrementally or on a small scale, test out things to see how they actually are received, or if they resonate with team members, clients, customers, users, etc. And that's something I learned working in agile teams that like work super fast. And so we build something, we break it, and you know, we start over it over and over again, and we move things. We change features every couple of weeks and we test new things. And so that like agile way of working can be really powerful in teams that have been established for like 5, 6, 10 years that are used to doing the same thing. So what if you experiment and for a couple of days you literally ideate and brainstorm new things that you can bring on, and then you actually create these testing environments within the company itself. And then you go out and validate those ideas with your audience, your customers, your clients, your users, et cetera, and test them out on a small scale so that it doesn't cost that much, but you know that you're going to understand the difference between A and B. So A-B testing could be one thing. It can be testing flavors. It can be bringing out like, you know, a jazz player in the middle of the cafe, if you have a cafe or something like that, and like test that out for a day. It can be changing the light and kind of asking customers, what do you think about this new lighting fixture? It can be adding a new feature and then seeing how people resonate with it, how many people click and things like that. And so testing things on a small scale can be a powerful way to actually move direction incrementally without having to like break the bank or like do like abrupt changes in companies.
I love that. Yeah, like finding ways to get that feedback, that immediate feedback as well. That is great. Thank you, Anne-Marie.
Thank you.
You shared a lot of really fantastic ideas today, and I'm really excited for you shared the products that you have as well, if you wanted to show them again. There was one that was related to onboarding, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So this one is specifically for app onboarding or tech onboarding on like software, web apps and mobile. And this is just a kit to help companies really think about that first stage of their experience, because typically that's where people drop off, right? So because it's that first impression when they get. And then they had this expectation in their mind about how things are going to go or what they can experience. And then they get there, either their experience or like their expectations are met, or they're actually, you know, disappointed a little bit. And so how can we actually create an experience that creates almost like a tick high for someone? And so then we'll be able to really align with those expectations and create something that is valuable for the user from the start and give them a taste of what they're going to actually experience within the app. So that's for the onboarding of an app, but I think it can also be applied for other things as well, even like a team onboarding, if you consider it from, you know, that perspective. There's also this one, and this is another one for teams to help them write more user-friendly content that's accessible and inclusive and in plain language. And this one is the one that I mentioned in the start or close to the start when it comes to Drawbackers, that agency that we collaborated with to actually design this package. It helps companies really think about how they can get to the next level of their technology. So if they're at stage two, how can you move to stage three? If they're at one, how can it actually move to the next goalpost? Because that's what it takes usually to improve experiences. Yeah, so those are the three decks that my team and I design. Yeah.
As we were mentioning in our last call, I think it's a very good touch point for people who want to learn more about your world and like your frameworks and how you think. And it's a very like low cost entry to get a chance to work with you without necessarily directly working with you. But I feel like once people pick up those card decks and start using them, they're like, okay, we really need to get Anne-Marie on our team and work with her directly. So I think it's a really, like the way that you've been able to productize your services and offer people different, because people learn in different ways, right? But get people to experience you and your company in different ways is so brilliant and so smart. So thank you for sharing that. Very excited for your newsletter. What is the best place for people to connect with you online?
I'd say LinkedIn is definitely the best place right now. If they want to connect with me directly, it would be at my Anne-Marie Mulumba profile. And you can also check out Wabella Studios company profile on LinkedIn and visit their website. I would love to see you there. We have a chat bot that you can interact with if you want and send us a cute message. And so that's one way you can connect with me and even email me as well. You can also find through our website the card decks as well if you want to check them out and see how they're built and who else bought them and what they say about them.
Amazing. Thank you. Thank you, Anne-Marie. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us on the show. We will catch you all in the next episode. Thank you for tuning in to another thought-provoking episode of the Power of Why podcast. For show notes and additional resources, visit us at www.powerofwhy.co. And while you're here, subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platform to continue your journey towards understanding the power of your purpose and creativity.